Israel's actions in the Rafah offensive after May 6th of 2024 disqualifies it from being a liberal democracy in the same sense as Western liberal democracies. This is basically based off the writings of Hugo Grotius and his writings on the rules of war. So would you agree or disagree with that?
I'd probably disagree, but I guess I would have to know more specifically, I guess, what we're talking about. Or what are the actions,
Okay.
I guess, that we feel were, I guess, disqualifying.
Yeah, I guess the specifically one thing I did highlight was there was a raid on February 12th and a series of airstrikes, which freed two Israeli hostages, and it resulted in the deaths of around 70 Palestinians. And Associated Press had reporting that it says around 70% of those people who were killed amongst those 70 Palestinians were civilians. And I think that's just one example in the broader case I'm making, in that Israel does not operate militarily the same way as other Western liberal democracies do. They don't put as much deference on human life. This is not an argument saying that Islamists like Hamas or Iran or Hezbollah do the same. I think my main point is that they fit in the region more than a lot of like people would like to think.
I think I would partially agree with that. I don't know if I would agree to disagree, but I would have to read more back into like what actually happened. This is the one where there was a bunch of video footage released of them doing this raid, right? They're inside the building and they see the people talking and they go through and they, yeah. I would have to see how they came to that conclusion of 70% of the people killed were civilians. I'd be very curious about that. One of the annoying things about this raid was that one of the things that people kept claiming over and over again was that Israel shouldn't bomb anything and they should just do special forces, special forces, special forces. And this was like a special forces raid to try to retrieve some hostages, but they met like really, really heavy resistance while they were doing this rescue mission. Yeah, there were definitely people killed. I'm curious what the 70% civilian number, though, I'm where that came out from.
Okay, just to be totally honest, and you should take that with a small grain of salt. It was repeated by Associated Press, but it was originally reported by the Gaza Ministry of Health. So
Sure,
it could be, it could possibly be inflated.
Which doesn't necessarily make it invalid. I'm just saying I would be curious. I would have to see how they came to that conclusion that 70% of the people were civilians, I
I mean,
guess.
but that's just one specific example in the broader claim that Israel does not operate in the same way most Western liberal democracies operate. If you look
What
at
is it?
Conflict,
I'm curious what
especially
we mean when we say,
the
like,
Christian front.
to get rid of like a Western liberal democracy. This is a very broad term that encompasses like a whole bunch of different aspects of a government.
Yes.
Like, I
I
don't
get
know if I would say that, like, a thing like this, like, would Abu Ghraib disqualify the United States from being like a Western liberal democracy? Like, I don't think so, but Abu Ghraib was a terrible atrocity with documented video evidence and everything. Yeah, like, we're going.
There's a difference in the amount of scale in which these things occur. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Abu Ghraib was maybe the tens of thousands, upwards tens of thousands, 100,000 Palestinians are in prison almost.
I don't think there are
Like,
100,000 Palestinians in prison. So Abu Ghraib was a US prison that was in Iraq, I believe,
Iraq.
right? Where they were torturing and abusing prisoners in ways that was beyond not just like advanced interrogation, but I think they were like sexually humiliating people, and people were taking pictures like with these prisoners that they were torturing and humiliating. It was not good, not good.
Again, another thing I would say is that a lot of these people face criminal, they were court-martialed, they faced criminal prosecution for many of these actions. I don't think what happened with the specifically the Israeli soldiers who sodomized the Palestinian prisoners, were they? I
Also,
generally
hold on, we gotta be
have
careful.
not
I'm
been
just
trained in
saying
this.
we gotta be really careful from going from story to story, because there are so many of these stories that end up, in my opinion, just being total bullshit. And for Israel, there's so many of them. Just on that special forces raid or whatever, I don't know if I ever saw any compelling evidence or reason to believe that there were like crazy war crimes or anything going on in the course of this raid. In terms of like, were people killed that were civilians? I'm sure that is possible. I don't know if there's any evidence or anything that came out of like indiscriminate fire on civilians or anything else. Also, the hostages were kept at, like, in two civilian homes. So I would just be curious to see who got killed there or what like the actual specific allegations are. And there are so many of these. I know you said that's just one example, but there are so many examples of these. That whole flower massacre thing, I don't believe that Israel was fake dropping food just to kill 100 Palestinians because they were bored. I don't buy these things. I'm sure
I mean, that's kind of why
we could look into more of the Palestinian rape thing. I just haven't dug into that because like a year and a half ago, I just stopped digging into the individual stories because it was a waste of time for so many of these. But like, even if I were to grant that some of these stories are true and that these are really bad things, I don't know if I would say this is just completely disqualifying them as a Western style liberal democracy. There would be so many other factors that would go into that, I think.
The specific thing I would try to pinpoint in which they don't operate in the same way as an aspect of a liberal democracy. Actually, Hugo Grotius was a liberal theorist during the Protestant Reformation and the 30 Years' War, and he talked a lot about the fact that if you are a state, you should put heavy deference and heavy limitations on military operations that might result in the harm of civilians. And through that, his writings is basically what we build most of the rules of engagement on international law off of. My main claim is that Israel acts in a way that they do not put enough deference and care in reducing the amount of civilian casualties, that it kind of goes against a lot of Grotius's writings, who's like a pivotal liberal theorist. first?
Yeah, I mean, like, that's kind of the question, huh?
Yeah.
Is, do we feel like there is a better, more responsible way that Israel could conduct itself militarily in the Gaza Strip? I'm not sure if I've ever seen or heard any compelling answers related to that, because every single time this topic is brought up, the vibe that I get is generally just that people feel like the only answer is Israel should just not do anything. Overwhelmingly, I don't think I've ever heard a single serious suggestion given for what would be like the moral way for Israel to respond to anything that's ever been done to them, other than they just shouldn't do it ever. I think a really good example of that
was that's like the lefty like retard kind of argument. That's not necessarily the argument I'm making.
If we were to look for a more specific argument for like how, like what they should have done different militarily, I guess like what's an alternate approach that they could have taken for the Gaza Strip stuff, at least like in the first year?
I think the over-reliance on conscripts and like the lack, and they have a very loose rules of engagement. I've read this one Associated Press article. I think just because they're like the entire IDF is like a conscript military, I'm not saying there's not like well-trained people within the IDF. I'm just saying that if they simply put more emphasis and funds on training a lot of their ground forces instead of this over-reliance on a lot of the air power and airstrikes, which at times have been inaccurate and led to a lot of civilian casualties, I think we could have saw much better outcomes in the Gaza Strip.
I haven't heard that argument before. Maybe it's possible, I guess. I don't know if I guess I would have to think about that.
I'm not saying send in special forces. I'm saying...
No, I understand. I'm trying to think of like... Because what I'm trying to think of is that... I guess like when I look at the strikes, when I look at the civilian deaths and everything, and I'm comparing it to like other conflicts, I'm not really getting the idea that this is like it's not like outside the norm so much in terms of what you would expect for civilian casualties, like if anything, and it's hard to compare it to anything else because nothing is quite as dense as Gaza, as all the lefties like to remind us all the time. But it doesn't really seem like, here's what I'll say. If nobody knew the numbers for how many people died in Gaza, and I were to give you the talking points about how Israel is indiscriminately bombing and killing people here without regard for civilian life, and then I were to ask somebody to estimate the amount of civilian death versus Hamas death, I don't think the numbers will look like anything like they actually do. I think people would assume 300,000, 400,000, 500,000 people were killed, with maybe like 10,000 Hamas fighters dying. I think that would be the assumption. And I don't think the numbers just don't seem to match that at all.
I see where you're coming from, but I also want to pivot a little bit to another point you previously made. I remember, you can say if this is accurate retelling of your opinion or not, but I think you did say once that after Rafah, after a lot of the accusations of like war crimes after Rafah, you kept seeing the IDF going into ground operation Gaza without a clear end in sight, and it didn't seem like they were making any considerable gains in dismantling or destroying Hamas. I just want to kind of talk about that a little bit and highlight that. Like, do you still hold that position? Is that an accurate retelling of your?
Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know why it went on for so long after that. I was never aware of, and I never heard any answers for why that was the case, why the conflict lasted so long after. I feel like the positions on everything are just like so extreme. So like there are so many statements you could make, I think, that are easily defensible, that the military action was excessive, was unnecessary, was maybe more pointed towards a goal of like population harassment or whatever versus like actual military ends. I think there are statements here that are pretty defensible. But when the statement is like, because of these statements, they're no longer a liberal democracy, it's like, that just feels like a really extreme, especially given all the other conduct of liberal nations and wars in the past. It just seems like a really, really, really extreme. Like, was the United States not a liberal democracy during Vietnam when we were also drafting soldiers, which is arguably worse than how the IDF works? So, I mean.
Yeah. I would have to think more about that last point you made. Like, for my final question, is there anything that you see in the recent months, I would say, with Israel kind of colluding with Trump and Orban, do you think that would push them outside the realm of a liberal democracy? Would you concede to that?
Not really, no. But this is like a really far off, like outside of a liberal, like you can be a really horrible liberal democracy, right? But like as long as you have relatively, like when B'Tselem like exists in Israel, it's hard to say that like that's no longer a liberal democracy. Or when 2 million Arabs live in Israel proper,
unless something drastic changes, you wouldn't really.
I guess, but it's just such a far out. There are so many good and strong criticisms that you could make way before you even get to that point. I don't know. There's just like a really extreme position to take, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me. Thanks, Mutun. Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Dustin.
Bye.
Yeah, be careful.
Bye bye.
I see a lot of people recently just in random stuff online or in the news talking about that Netanyahu himself is like one of the biggest barriers to progress. And I just want Destiny's temperature on that.
I mean, a little bit, but I mean, Netanyahu is there for a reason, and it's because the Israeli population still kind of like is broadly supportive of that coalition, and Netanyahu is good at keeping that coalition of people together. So it's kind of, it's like saying Trump is a big barrier to progress in the United States. Like, it's kind of true, but I mean, America voted for him, unfortunately.
The big Yahoo.
Could you expand a little bit more on like how he's keeping it like together recently, aside from just, I guess, attacking Iran would be the big thing, but it also seems like some of his population is getting a little exhausted, or maybe I'm...
What do you mean exhausted?
No, not seeing the whole thing. Exhausted, like, of war, of, like, conflict, of, like, feeling, I guess, under fire, or, like...
I don't know. Are they? I'm not really sure right now. Do they feel exhausted? Or I feel like Israel, especially... I think there was a time when they were, like, right before the Hezbollah attacks, but then after they got Hezbollah, after Assad fled, after Nasrallah died, after these Iran attacks, I don't know. I feel like if you're, like, a pro-war Israeli person, I feel like you're sitting pretty good right now.
Might be true, but I guess how many of them like still would remain pro-war after seeing like how the conflict has been kind of on the downturn the last couple of weeks, or like how the...
What do you mean? The I last guess, couple like, of weeks, the Ayatollah is dead. This is like the number one fucking keynote thing of your Israel. It's like your dream.
I guess that's Rebozo. Fair. Yeah, Rebozo. I guess, yeah, so you don't think there's any downtrend at all? Maybe I'm just reading the wrong shit. You think people are pretty happy there? Like,
that would be my assumption would be that they're like, that they feel like they're sitting pretty good right now. That'd be my assumption. I could be wrong on that though. I don't follow like local Israeli politics, but you've got like a US president that is sycophantically on your side for everything. And then you've got all of your enemies are constantly just taking the fattest fucking L's ever. So, I mean, I don't know why, if you're Israeli, yeah, I feel like you'd be sitting pretty good right now. That'd be my feeling. Maybe the leadership change will come soon, but I mean, I feel like, yeah, if you were like a big pro-war Israeli, I feel like you've gotten almost everything you've wanted over this conflict.
What is the other leader like compared to like a Democrat in the United States?
Israel has like so many political parties. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. They've got so many. So it's just like coalitions of
people. That's what I was reading. They have a lot of like fairly close to the center, kind of center left, center right people that are, I guess, vying for power, and their coalition's fairly fractured. Because I think Netanyahu himself only has his coalition of like two or three different parties is like just over half of the Knesset right now.
Is that true? That Netanyahu's coalition is only two or three parties?
I think it's only like maybe it's a little more than two or three, but I don't think it's like
It's five parties.
Five, okay.
So Likud is the party he's a part of. That's 32 seats right now, and then there's 11 seats with the Shas. 7 with the Religious Zionist Party, 6 with Otzma Yehudit, and 4 New Hope seats.
And I forget
what's
which
so
one,
funny?
But
what's
Star
so funny?
Wars seats.
Really? Really?
One of them is, I think, also vying for protection from, is like, I guess, the Israeli version of the draft. And that's like, I guess, a hot topic. And
well, they had, it was, I forget what the name of them are, that whatever their more religious people are. They, for the longest of times, were excluded from having to be drafted, were excluded from conscription. And I think that changed a year ago, where Israel finally made it so, no, you motherfuckers have to sign up for the IDF as well. The Orthodox? Yeah. I think that changed, though, right? Somebody can tell me more on that.
I don't know if it officially changed, but I think that's, yeah, that was one of the things I was reading about. But okay, cool. Well, I appreciate it as always.
Yeah, be careful.
Bye-bye.
My question and claim would relate more to Israel being a major U.S. ally, so like one of the allies codified in law that's a non-NATO major ally.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that they should have that designation, or do you think that like maybe we should distance more with them?
I think it's a good designation to have, but we should, like, the problem is that, especially under Trump, is Trump acts like we have no leverage. Like, if we're designating somebody like this, we should have a great deal of say over how we can dictate their behavior to be. But we're pretending right now, or at least Trump is pretending, or he's just weak, that we don't have any say over their behavior. So, like, I think designating them like that is fine. The Middle East is an important region. Israel is a strong ally for that region. However, if we're going to designate somebody like that, like, along with all the privileges that come with being a strong U.S. partner, there should also be, like, the ability for us to place big restrictions on bad behavior, which it seems like we don't.
Okay. Yeah, I think I agree with that then. My issue, though, is we never do seem to.
We definitely have, like, under past presidents. Like, you can look at this Iran war, for instance, how Netanyahu has been begging the U.S. for so long to engage in this conflict. And most U.S. leaders before Trump have said, no, we're not doing that. Or you can look at, like, again, the JCPOA from Obama. Israelis hated Obama for that. That was like the biggest stab in the back. These motherfuckers hated the fact that the U.S. signed that with Iran. But I mean, like, Israel's our partner, so, you know, chill out, sit down. And that's how it should go to some extent, but yeah.
I guess in my mind, it just doesn't really feel like we're partners. It kind of seems like they're a, like, Qatar-tier ally that maybe does a little bit of intelligence sharing. But, like, the main reasons that I usually get told, and you can tell me if you agree or disagree, that we're allies with Israel is sort of like, there's the intelligence aspect, there's the military technology aspect, right? Because they develop a lot of military technology that we use and we share with each other and we learn from each other. But it feels like we don't actually share that much military technology with them.
I don't know about military technology. I mean, the nice thing about being friends with Israel is they're the strongest military in the region. So we have like big ups there if we want to fight with anybody else or in terms of like region control. They're the strongest guys there. So when it comes to dealing with what used to be that axis of like, Syria, Iraq, and Iran, and keeping like Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states safe, like Israel, I think is a pretty big bulwark there. But without Israel as our partner, I mean, I think they could basically just dictate where they want that region to go completely without us. Intelligence is nice as well, but.
But do you really feel like they could just change and sculpt the whole region? I mean, like we don't have any really major bases in Israel. Like usually what we have in Israel are air defense artillery systems, which we send out whenever Israel's about to get attacked to help, defend.
I'm not talking about our military. I'm saying Israel's military can do.
But do you not feel like even if we like restrained our relations a little bit, that we would still be able to control the region a bit more, like just purely due to our presence? I mean, that's kind of why we have bases in these regions, like in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf states and in Kuwait.
I mean, we have bases for power projection and to keep like insanely crazy shit from happening, but we don't really control proxies with our bases, forward operating bases like that as much. I guess, like, what is your question? Like,
I don't know. It just feels crazy to me that Israel, which I feel like is not a very good ally of ours, is codified in law to be a major non-NATO ally.
If we were to, I mean, like, if we were to completely sever ties with Israel, would we expect?
I'm not advocating for that.
What are we advocating for?
I just think it's crazy that like Israel is pretty belligerent to us in a lot of ways that I think most people don't know about. Like, for example, they sold us the Iron Dome system to the U.S. military, to one of my sister units when I was in the military. And after the acquisition, we asked them for the software to run them, and they just said that it wasn't part of the deal. So we have like, I think it's like 6 Iron Dome systems that we can't use because we don't even have the software for it because they weren't wanting to give it to us as part of the deal, if that makes sense.
What did you work at in the military?
I was in an air defense artillery unit.
Okay. That seems, I feel like there's way more to that story. That would be mega sus, especially because my understanding is the software side of stuff is almost as important, or if not more important, or like equally important to the hardware these days. I don't know how you could buy a system like that and not have, I feel like there's got to be way more to that story.
That's what was relayed to me, right? Because we were planning on buying more and rolling them out to more units. And then eventually we didn't. We shifted away from using Iron Dome systems because we weren't really able to. Because that was part of the our like 2030 modernization program in order to combat drones, was we were trying to incorporate the Iron Dome systems into our air defense capabilities more.
I really have no idea. I can't answer. That sounds to me like some shit I would say if I fucked up as a manager and I'm trying to explain to my soups or my frontline employees why we don't have a thing because I fucked an order up or something. But I don't know. I can't speak to it. I mean, like, I guess back to, I know you say you're just asking, but like, what would our, or I guess, what is the prescription? Or what do you think we should do differently, I guess, with their approach?
I mean, well, I think we probably have the same prescription, but it's like, well, we have mostly the same. The U.S. needs to take a lot firmer of a stance on a lot of things. I feel like our conditional aid in terms of like arms and what we give them to purchase arms from us. Like, I feel like that needs to be enforced a lot more strictly when we're giving demands and then they're not complying. What was like the, 'cause didn't Biden have a big red line in Gaza where he was like, you can't go past
what
this
is,
area.
I keep hearing this red line thing. Can somebody explain to me what the red line is? Somebody brought this up the other day that there was like a red line where we can't go to Rafah. My understanding was that Biden said you can't go to Rafah while there are where every single like refugee is currently residing at. So they had to pause that invasion into Rafah for a week or two to evacuate. It was about 1 million people from Rafah up north before they began. But now I've heard people say that that was a red line, that they were never supposed to go into Rafah. Is there like a link on this, or what were the actual statements here? Because I feel like that was my recollection, was that you can't just push in here when there are all these civilians, and then they waited for the civilians to evac, and then they pushed after.
I don't have anything on hand. That was my recollection of the situation. Was I feel like they were just told that their offensive wasn't allowed to advance any further than that. Huh. Because I think there were like logistical issues with getting the civilians out of Rafah into other places because of how small the Gaza
was. Yeah, I think they had like no plan. They were just like, we're just going to fucking bomb it and see what happens. And then I'm pretty sure the U.S. was like, you're not going to do that because there's going to be like 1 million fucking civilian deaths. And this is...
They end up doing that anyways?
No, they evacuated all of the... Like, I'm pretty sure if I look for evacuation, Rafah, civilians, March 31st, 2025. Israel's military on Monday issued sweeping evacuation orders covering Rafah and nearby areas, and indicating it could soon launch another major ground invasion in the Gaza Strip's southernmost city. Israel ended its ceasefire with a Hamas militant group and renewed its air ground war earlier this month. At the beginning of March, it cut off all supplies of food, fuel, medicine, and humanitarian aid to the territory of 2 million Palestinians, pressure Hamas to accept a proposed changes to the truce agreement. Israel's military ordered Palestinians to head to Muwasi, a sprawl of squalid tent camps along the coast. The orders came during Eid al-Fitr, a normally festive Muslim holiday marking the end of the year. Let's see. Last May, they launched a major operation in Rafah on the borders with Egypt. Supposed to withdraw from the quarter under ceasefire. It signed with Hamas, later refused to do so, citing the need to prevent weapon smuggling on Monday. People fled with their belongings. Was this after the... I think this was the issue that orders issued. I'm almost positive that I remember this story, that there were like almost like 1 million people that ended up fleeing before this attack. Let's see. Biden's red line. Israel's actions in Rafah so far do not represent a major gun invasion. What is this? Hold on.
This morning, with Israeli forces pushing to the heart of Rafah and growing numbers of Palestinian civilians killed, the White House facing questions on President Biden's red line and if Israel crossed it. Especially after that strike over the weekend, killing dozens in a firestorm at a camp in Rafah.
We don't want to see a major ground operation. We haven't seen that at this point.
How many more charred corpses does he have to see before the president considers a change in policy?
We don't want to see a single more innocent life taken. And I kind of take a little offense at the question. No civilian casualties is the right number of civilian casualties.
But more civilian casualties yesterday after a new strike on this tent encampment killed at least 21 people, according to the emergency services in Hamas-run Gaza. Most of them, women and children. The IDF denies the tents were in a safe zone. Israel also releasing an initial investigation into the weekend attack, which has drawn international criticism. The IDF says it used small bombs to target two Hamas commanders, but that a secondary explosion started the enormous fire.
Our munition alone could not have ignited a fire of this size.
The IDF says hidden Hamas weapons might have caused the blast, but offered no firm evidence. An Israeli official earlier said a gas tank could have sparked the flames. The Pentagon also confirming an NBC News report that the U.S. military has been forced to suspend aid delivery into Gaza by sea after a section of its temporary pier broke apart in bad weather.
Okay, listen, I will find this later, okay? But sorry, I'm diverting from your conversation. Okay, go ahead, continue.
I mean, I think we agree that the U.S. needs to be a lot stronger on Israel, but it just feels like we all say that we should and then nothing ever really happens. And this isn't me like Pepe posting or anything, but it just feels like with how fickle of an ally they are, like, I don't know if you remember this, in the early 2000s, they were selling our avionics to China.
We just laughed. We thought that was funny.
I thought it was funny.
Why is that funny, though? I mean, it's kind of fucked up, right? Like, this is someone who has a status, like, do we consider Israel to be on the same level as Japan? I just feel like they're...
This is the issue. The issue is that, like, there is no in-between for anything on any of this ever. So, like, when it comes to any military operations in Gaza, all of the loudest voices just say there should be no war, period. That's a Not only is that an impossible position, it's a retarded take. It's impossible to work with position. So that's where like 90% of the people who criticize every single Israeli military operation, that's the position they occupy, that there should be no war at all. So absent that, and then that same thing applies too when it comes to like what are restrictions that we should place on Israel. Well, when if somebody is saying there should be more restrictions on what Israel does, it's going to be 90% occupied by people who are saying we should send them nothing, give them nothing, or maybe cut them out of our alliance completely, rather than like how do you work with a difficult ally who is doing things that, like, given the opportunity to, Israel will do things that is in their interest, and sometimes even contrary to our own interests. But like, we only ever have these conversations about Israel. And, you know, you're mentioning the fact that like these guys have been codified in law as an informal ally. Turkey is a formal ally of the United States. Turkey's in NATO, right? And Turkey was literally fucking World War III tier shooting down Russian jets that were flying into Syria for barely entering their airspace. There's a huge deal. And we were like, whoa, what the fuck is going on?
Like murder Kurds?
Yeah, and they also, well, they do that all the time anyway. But yeah, there was that huge thing where when we pulled out of Syria, there were a bunch of Kurdish forces that were working with the United States on operations and missions. And we said, you'll be safe, don't worry. And then we left. And then Turkey went down and they murdered all of them. And nobody gave a fuck or talks about any of it.
It was because of Trump.
We didn't even
too,
talk about anything related to what should we do about Turkey or restricting this. We just don't have the conversation because nobody cares because no Jews, no news. So it's annoying because like all the questions you're asking are good questions. Like Israel is the I don't know what you would call this type of ally, but like if they have an opportunity to get one over on us, they absolutely will do that. I think you'd have to be naive to say otherwise. But the problem is that people act like Israel is the only country that will do this. And then the solution is never like, okay, well, how do we bring an ally like this under more kind of control or place more restrictions, have a more reliable operation where we can rely on them to kind of follow our lead on things? Instead, it's just like, this is why we have to cut them out completely. And then it's a complete neglect for anything else that'll happen in the future in that region. And it's just like, that's not a serious suggestion and it's not workable. That's my issue, I guess, mostly.
Would you say like they're like a little bit adversarial?
I wouldn't say adversarial, but they're just like, when our interests align, really good things will happen. Yeah. When our interests are not aligned, Israel, without a very strong push, will take their side versus our side.
They care less, yeah.
Yes.
They just do what they want, yeah.
Yeah.
My only issue is it seems like it's been like maybe 20 years of trying to wrangle our, you know, ally.
Well, what do you mean by like, wrangle? I don't think we have like strong wrangle forces even in the United States. There was the JCPOA with Obama, which was a big deal, but Trump came in 2016 and Trump is an Israeli dick suck. Trump gave Israel everything they wanted and more and wouldn't restrain these motherfuckers on literally fucking anything. And then Biden comes in and then we have fucking October 7th and it's like, Jesus, fuck. It's just like a really bad set of circumstances. I don't know. I mean, I get what is your, what are some prescriptions or solutions that you have?
I do think that we should probably expect a lot more in return in terms of military technology. Like that, I think that's a big thing for me.
What do you mean?
I do have an article
more,
that I can
wait,
review
for. What do you mean by expect more in return for military technology?
At the moment, we are currently expected to go to war with a near peer ally. So that would be like China or maybe.
Wait,
Russia.
I didn't understand that term. Did you say near peer ally or what?
Near peer. That's basically like a military force that is almost equal.
Oh,
near
peer
military capability.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I think a really critical part of that is going to be new air defense systems. So like the Iron Dome, I think that's probably a non-negotiable that.
I don't know if the Iron Dome,
though.
Well, no. One, it's not. But I don't know if the Iron Dome is like that useful to the United States. Like the Iron Dome is for like crude rocket intercepting things. There's like the Sling of David, I think, or whatever that might be a little bit more relevant. But if we're talking about near peer ally, I don't know if the Iron Dome is helping you against somebody that's shooting like cruise missiles or really high altitude ballistic missiles. Like this is mainly just for. It's just for like.
Well, no.
What? Go ahead.
I'm not talking about missile interception because that would be more like THAAD that we already have.
Sure.
What I'm talking about is for like. The escalation in drone warfare, because I'm pretty sure this was in the workings when I got out. It's not like classified or anything, but we were trying to use them as anti-drone systems, because that's one of the biggest things that's like, as I'm sure if you've loosely followed the Ukraine war, drone warfare is a big aspect of
yeah, I've heard.
Yeah, the war
but
itself.
I would be and I just could just not be informed on this or just making a bad assumption, but like I would be kind of surprised if it was the case that the Iron Dome could be repurposed for drone warfare.
Why do you think that's not the case?
Because I thought the main achievements for the Iron Dome is that It has a geographic layout of things that should be protected. You've got your cities and your open spaces that aren't. And then it can see crewed rockets that are being fired. It can calculate the ballistics. And then it can launch an interceptor if the calculation trajectory is like going to be in a city. And then it can intercept and destroy the rocket. But drones, unless there are drones that I'm not aware of, drones can't be calculated like that. Like a drone can just change trajectory. And like an interceptor is not going to work the same way.
Are there missiles that do this as well?
Possible, but I'm more so thinking of the Shahids, because I'm pretty sure the Iron Dome is what they utilize to take out the Shahid Iranian drones.
How does a Shahid work? Can a Shahid change trajectory or no?
It's not like the quadcopter ones. It's like the have you ever seen like the Reaper drones that like kind of orbit, if that makes sense? Like they kind of circle around, but it's more like a kamikaze.
It's
like an RV plane almost that you just steer.
The Shaheds.
I would need to learn more about the Shahed drone. My understanding is that the do the Iron Dome missile interceptors, can those missiles, once they've been fired, can they change their trajectory significantly, or are they more or less on a set path once they've been shot?
Pretty sure the interceptors are rockets, so I don't think they can. No.
People in chat are saying yes.
They can?
Oh, can they?
I'm talking about the interceptors.
Soul City's wrong. Yes, they can. They can't. Yes, no, yes, no.
It can be steered. I mean, like, can they be significantly changed or just, like, slightly changed? Because then the next question is going to be, how much do the Shahed change trajectories?
Yes, they can change trajectory. Appearing as sharp abrupt turns. Okay.
It's a short-range interceptor, so it's not going to matter too much. You can see them change directions in videos. Oh, okay.
How much is an Iron Dome missile?
I want to say they're, like, $2 million each or something. The interceptors?
Jesus, they're, like,
they're expensive as fuck.
Cost?
I believe. I don't know. Jesus. Yeah. How much do Tamir intercept? Hello?
I'm just shortly cutting in to say that Iron Dome does not work with Shahed. Like,
wait, these are 40 to 100,000 per missile. Just a quick thing. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. So basically, it's designed to intercept short range, low tech rockets and not high speed ballistics, not cruise missiles, and not drones of the Shahed type, definitely. And more importantly, it's only good for a very, very small country. So something like Ukraine in size, it will not be possible to do, and definitely not possible with the United States. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's what I've been told by military people. Bye-bye.
Be careful.
Thank you, Anna.
I would have to read more, I guess, about the drones and everything. But my understanding is that, I already gave it. My understanding is that the Iron Dome is not something that would be like useful. Definitely not against any advanced, like you said before, like pure military allies. It wouldn't be useful against any advanced attackers. And then I don't know if it would be good against like the small drones or overwhelming drone attacks either. That's my understanding, but I guess I could be wrong. I don't know. But I would also say, I mean, like if we really wanted to do something about defending our country or allies against drone attacks, we probably should have worked with Ukraine more and stuff. But
we worked with them a little bit, but I mean,
not enough.
Well, I don't know if we ever gave it to Ukraine, but we have something called a directed energy, or it's a CUAS. It's like a handheld weird little space gun that you can actually shoot at the drones to disable them. But I don't think they work anymore because of the optic fibers that they run now. I think the main concern right now is we're trying to find a way to combat a lot of things that I feel like Israel would have the expertise on.
Ukraine would have more expertise, no?
Yeah, but a more pragmatic point, I guess. I feel like we could get the Republicans on board to extract.
I guess, the fact of the matter for this actually doesn't matter. I mean, like, if Israel can help us significantly with this, then I'm just going to agree with you. I think they should, obviously. Maybe there are more.
You think they will?
If we force them, yeah. But we would have to take a strong position on them, of which currently U.S. leadership is not willing to do.
Okay.
Good question.
I feel like it's a very one-sided relationship. We get intelligence that we get from other nations in the Middle East.
Well, let's assume that we ditched Israel as an ally. We were like, fuck this. And we just left. What do you think would happen next? Do you think it would be, like, walk me through some of the things you think would happen, and then if you think it would be good or bad for...
What would happen in terms of, like, the Middle East?
Yeah, sure. And do you think it would be good or bad for U.S. interests?
What would happen next? I think that depends on how cynical you want to get. Like, I could see them just going full bore on Gaza and the West Bank, probably. But I feel like they're kind of doing that now, if that makes sense. Like, they're just biding their time and...
Do you really think that Israel's going full...
No. I'm saying like with the settlements, it's an incremental thing. Like, I think if we abandon them, I think you're right in that Israel would probably have a lot less discretion. But I mean, would you disagree that Israel is trying to gain more control of the Gaza Strip or the West Bank right now?
No, they definitely are.
So I guess like my point would just be that it's going to accelerate. You're right that they would be negative, but I'm not advocating for like a cutoff of.
Well, yeah, but then I'm asking. Okay, so I was thinking, what are you
relationships or
what are you advocating for? What do you think we should do?
We either need to enforce these like hard boundaries that we set. Like it's crazy to me that we bought Iron Domes from them and then didn't get all the software that we asked for when that was conditional of the deal.
Okay.
So we either need to like have a backbone. Like, would you agree that we kind of do let them get away with stuff sometimes?
What do you think based on what I've said so far here?
I mean, probably, yeah.
Yes, I agree.
I think you would agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So then I think, like I said, I think we agree on the solution. It just seems like you make excuses for them a lot of the time.
What excuse have I made for Israel?
I'm trying to remember because you haven't talked about Israel in a while. It seemed kind of weird to me that you didn't want to call them evil.
Okay.
Not Israel itself, but like the law is kind of crazy, right?
Yeah. Okay. I don't think I make excuses for Israel. I'm pretty critical of when they do bad things. I think we should hold them more accountable for things. Like, I acknowledge that they...
I mean, you're not, though. Like, you don't think the flower massacre happened, or you think...
I don't think it did. I think it's bullshit. It didn't happen.
Right, yeah, see?
Do you think that Israel purposely dumped a bunch of bread in for the hopes that Palestinians would surround it and then just start killing them? That they would send a whole night unit out into the unoccupied Gaza Strip to do that?
Is that the claim? Isn't the idea that Palestinians were getting aid and then Israel started doing limited fire into the crowd because there was like a suspected terrorist threat or something like that?
The claim that I was reading was, I think you're referring to a separate incident, but I could be wrong. I don't know. The claim that I remember reading was that there was like flour aid or something that was being delivered, and then the IDF waited for hungry Palestinians to surround the aid, and then they just opened fire on the people to kill them all because epic. And it was like and they call that the flour massacre. The thing that you're talking about was, I think there was like a caravan of trucks, and then eventually gunfire broke out in this, and the IDF claims that people started to try to surround or tip the trucks, and then Palestinians claim that the IDF opened fire for no reason. I think those are two separate events.
Because the flour massacre was when they were swarming the aid trucks, right? And then
I thought it was a different thing, but I could be wrong on that. I thought the flour massacre was a separate.
Well, because I thought that one was where Israel was basically saying they felt threatened, and then because of the like mass.
Oh no! Like, I think this might be the same event. Yeah, I'm sorry. This might be the same event because this was food aid trucks as well. Sure. What is your perspective or your vibe of like what happened here?
I mean, I guess I would call it a massacre, but like sometimes mistakes happen, I guess.
No, I'm asking you, what are you vibing out? What are you thinking? Well, now you sound like you're making excuses for Israel. What do you think happened?
What do I think happened?
Like, do you think the IDF went in saying that, like, we're going to bait Palestinians with these trucks and then we're going to murder them all?
No,
I think that's why it's called, like, the flower massacre, is that... I'm just taking some quotes here from the head of this Wikipedia article, but it's like, survivors described the massacre as an ambush, stating that Israeli forces deliberately opened fire as Palestinians approached the aid trucks, resulting in a rush away from the gunfire that added to the death toll.
I mean, I would say it's probably a massacre in the same way that a lot of our like battles with Native Americans were massacres, where like you can kind of see why there was a battle that started, but then it ended up just turning into a lot of unnecessary bloodshed, if that makes sense.
Okay. I don't think this would be comparable because the Native Americans were their own standing fighting force. Obviously, they were disadvantaged for a lot of reasons, but these were people coming for aid, no?
Yes.
Okay, wait, what do you think we disagree on? Or hold on, I'm curious. What is the...
About the flower massacre?
Yeah.
Earlier you said that you didn't think the flower massacre happened, but it sounds like now you do.
Was that the original claim? I thought the claim had something to do with, like, does Israel... I don't even remember how we got here. I don't believe... When I say I don't believe that the flower massacre happened, what I'm saying is I don't... Like, there were people that died... that got killed by the IDF around aid trucks. I'm not denying that that happened, but the reason why people took to calling it the flower massacre, and then the claims that were echoing all over social media was that Israel was like baiting people to aid trucks and then shooting and killing them when they feel like they got close enough. It was like an ambush, or it was like a bait for it. You make excuses for Israel. Oh yeah, I was just curious what excuses, because I feel like I'm pretty honest when I describe their behavior. I don't think I've described any of the behavior or like necessarily excused any of it. The biggest excuses you're going to find are whether or not I think they had like a just cause for war after October 7th, I guess, is where people are going to have the strongest like factual disagreements. But
the easiest one to argue about that we probably disagree on is, do you think that Israel should still be at war? Like, I feel like they've probably had enough time to accomplish their military objectives.
But I've said that for like a year, haven't I? After they did the push into Rafah, my understanding was they'd ground pushed through the entirety of the Gaza Strip. And then past that, I don't know why that war lasted for like another year and a half. I just didn't understand that. It just seemed silly to me. I don't know if I ever got a great explanation for why that continued for so long, other than there were still Hamas people hiding everywhere. But then it's like, I mean, how long are we going to continue that conflict for then, was my feeling for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we agree on that. It's good talking to you.
Yeah.
Curious about how you view the military actions of Israel. like maybe not as a whole, but more like how they conduct their business. One of the main things that people talk about is like the roof knocking thing and just evacuation orders and just telling people like, yeah, get out of here, we're going to strike here. And it seems like this is like a moral choice of like, oh, we don't want to kill civilians, so just get out of there. But I always feel like it seems a little bit fear-mongering among the civilian population, because it doesn't always hit those people that get warned to evacuate. So sometimes it's like a bigger region, or they call phones of people that are actually not in the region and telling them to evacuate. So I always felt like the whole situation is more like meant to instill fear and less about actually preventing civilian casualties. What do you feel about that?
I don't know the number of, I haven't even heard this claim before, so I don't know the percentage of calls that are said to be going to places that aren't actually being bombed. I mean, I would be opposed to them probably doing that.
It's not just that. Like, I mean, currently it's mostly in Lebanon happening. Like the whole regions are like, just get out of there. We're going to basically invade more or less. And I think they did some of that in Gaza as well. In the past, it was always like, first we just strike with a small ammunition. So we just get out of there and then they strike with a big one. They stopped that after a while. But I always felt like the whole argument that this is like a moral choice, it always felt more like, oh, we're going to strike here anyway. We already calculated civilian losses into the strike. You can get out of there if you want, but actually we don't really care. But that, because I'm not sure if they actually check if people leave. Like, I don't think...
Well, I mean, if the people don't leave, they're still going to bomb it, right? Or if the, yeah, so, I mean, whether they check or not, I imagine that would be their plan. But do you think they just shouldn't give any heads up at all? Or would that be the better choice? Or
No, I don't think it's about giving heads up or not. I just feel like it's more like an excuse. Because I don't
think... Well, then do you think they shouldn't do it then? I mean, should they just stop?
I don't think those most strikes are valid. Like, if they can hit, like, a general somewhere in Iran with a precise strike in the apartment, the same way that they did in Lebanon a few times over, like, they can do that. But they also just destroy whole apartments in Beirut. Because why not? So I always have, like, this... I don't understand why in some cases they were like really precise. We can get this car, we can get this guy on a motorcycle, but we also just like, okay, we're going to strike a whole building that most likely maybe didn't even have weapons, but just Hamas members or Hezbollah members in it. So I'm always curious of how there's so many different styles of attacks happening. I don't see the reason overall in this. And it always strikes more like, we want to make people afraid of us and not actually having a purpose.
I mean, there's a couple things. One, I would say that I don't know if Israel would embark on a campaign like that, because I don't know if that's ever worked for them or if that would like discourage people from attacking them, number one. Number two, I don't know if I would necessarily, I would have to look into it because I just haven't followed this recently, but I don't, as a principle, attacking into Lebanon is a lot different than attacking Gaza. I don't know if I agree with Israel attacking Beirut at all. Like, I think there are arguments for southern Lebanon where Hezbollah actually was, but I don't know if, like, them attacking Lebanon is basically they're at war with the country of Lebanon. That just seems a lot more, like, much further along. I just haven't heard enough to know why I would support that action. So I think just like principally, I would be opposed to almost all those strikes. But
even in Gaza, they were like...
This just sounds like a lose-lose position then, where it's like if they weren't warning people, we would accuse them of trying to maximize civilian deaths. But when they do warn people, it's just terrorism. But I mean, like, it's always going to be like attacking a country, being at war and bombing places is always going to be scary, like to the civilian population, no matter what, right?
But then how do you feel like then after more or less forcing the whole... city to be evacuated, more or less, when they move in, then just bulldoze anyway everything afterwards, because it's more secure that way to go from building to building, then I'm always curious, like, that could technically be a war crime to just eradicate civilian buildings even though there's no more threat coming from them. So I'm always because in Lebanon we see the same thing as well now. Like, they just push everyone out and then just destroy whole villages without anyone there anymore. They literally go in there and plant explosives to destroy the buildings. And I would consider that like very close to a war crime, because you're not allowed to just destroy civilian buildings just because they could be used later for military purposes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I feel like they did the same in Gaza.
I would have to know the rationalization for why they're hitting what they're hitting. It's difficult because there are. It's difficult because there are reasons why you could do this that could be justified, but there's not really like an oversight board to know if they're being honest about it. So it's hard to say.
That's the main issue I have. There is no outside observer telling us if this is the correct way that they're doing it, or if it's just randomness in a sense, or if it's just purely for destruction. Because right now, I feel like the same that happened in Gaza for like, yeah, we destroy whole cities so they don't come back here. The same thing happens now in Lebanon. It's like we destroy every city that we conquer to make sure that they don't come back. And I feel like that has always been their way of fighting, I feel like. So that's always the reason why I'm more against this this war is mostly because history has taught us that the way that Israel fights is just push them out as far as possible, destroy so they don't come back. And so I always feel like that is my main reason why I'm against any of their actions mostly. And that's why I have been critical of them for a long time, like even before you probably started more about that. So I'm curious how you feel about how they conduct war versus are they justified to conduct war?
I mean, generally speaking, I think they try to conduct war in not a fucked way. But I mean, especially if you're Lebanese, I mean, you're not going to be of that opinion, because I think Israel is probably some of the worst conduct I think that Israel has ever been committing has probably been in Lebanon, right? Sabrilla and Shentilla, whatever the fuck that massacre or whatever was, that was in Lebanon, right? During the first, yeah, and that was during the fuck, I forget the dates now. The first war, in the 80s.
Yeah, somewhere then.
And then, I believe it was during the first war in Lebanon. I don't think it was in 2006. I think it was in the first war in Lebanon, where Israel was trying to commit to this idea of basically dropping leaflets in Beirut saying that the only reason we're bombing you is because Hezbollah is there, with the idea being that the Lebanese population would reject Hezbollah, but all it did was it made them fucking hate Israel. So,
They literally said the Christian cities to push out the Shiites. So.
Yeah, so I think Israel's tried this in Lebanon in the past. So, I mean, like, I feel like if I was Lebanese, I would probably fucking hate the way that Israel conducts war. I feel like some of their worst conduct has been in Israel, or from Israel has been in Lebanon. Yeah, I don't know what else I'm going to say. I mean, most of that behavior seemed pretty stupid. But then it's also it sucks that Hezbollah for the longest time basically ran, you know, everything near the Litani and like south of that country. And it's even, I think, a little bit part of your parliament now, right? Like it's an elected party that has people.
I mean, they're technically separate, technically.
Sure. They do have, there are members of like, am I making this up? There were members of like the Hezbollah party in your parliament?
In mine?
Are you Lebanese?
No.
Oh, I thought you said you were from Beirut. I thought I heard you say that. I'm sorry.
No,
my bad.
The thing is that how the parliament works in Lebanon is also a little bit insane, because they kind of have to have all the sects represented in the parliament, so they cannot really vote for anyone else technically than Hezbollah. So
yeah.
So it's a little bit of a mess anyway.
There. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's a clusterfuck. But
that's why I'm mainly against all these actions, because just looking at the past and the whole history of the region, I always felt like that Israel, I mean, you said it as much that if something happens to Israel, they will fight back, and they will fight back hard. So it's always the same. When something happens against Israel, then my personal immediate realization is that a lot of people will now die, and not Israelis.
Sure.
So that's why I'm like a little bit allergic to anything happening in the region. And I'm not even like agreeing with anything of Hamas is doing Hezbollah, but it's always like, now civilians will be suffering again, because no one is going to stop Israel from doing what they're doing.
Sure. I guess the question is like, what do we do about the situation is a lot different now, but like say go back 5 years ago, what do we do about Hamas and Hezbollah?
I think the same way we kind of acted with ISIS, with all the strikes that happened in Europe.
Well, hold on. The dealing with ISIS was like a full coalition of different countries invading, conquering, throwing them out, and also like a massive civil war that led to the failure of the Syrian state, no?
Yeah, but did... I mean, beside France that was striking ISIS targets in Syria and in the region, none of the European states was like, oh, now we're going to invade the region to make sure that ISIS is destroyed. Like, it's not like there was nothing happening from Europe, but Europe was more like, okay, this shit happens. We probably bomb a few of the targets there, but we're not going to invade. Like, it's not like the US was like, oh,
well,
yeah,
but they didn't have to invade because everybody else was invading, no? Like, you had the Kurds, you had the FSA, you had so many different factions in the Middle East.
Yeah, we were
the Iraqi army.
Yeah, we were supporting the fight. Yeah, of course we did that.
So like for...
But it's the same with this. But it's the same with, I think, with Israel.
Like, but wouldn't we be treating them the same if we just supported Israel fighting against... Wouldn't that just be exactly where we are now?
I mean, it sounds like really insane to say this out loud. But sometimes it's the same with the Rabin assassination and all the small little terror attacks that happened in Israel. I always feel like at some point you kind of have to accept that this shit will happen. But when you overreact, even more shit will happen in the future. It sounds really shitty to say that out loud, but it's like I always feel like the overreaction to terror attacks will cause more issues in the long run.
Sure, but I mean, if you look at, like, the United States, like, tore up the Middle East for 2 decades because of a per capita much smaller terrorist attack than 9/11 in the U.S. You had all of Europe that were clamoring for the destruction of ISIS based on the per capita much smaller terror attacks that were happening throughout Europe. How do you get to a state where you just tell Israel that they just have to sit and take it?
Yeah, but okay, but it's not like I'm supporting. I'm like in support of the Afghanistan war and the Iraq war. Like
I'm just saying that like no other country on the planet would endure those types of attacks ever. And so if you look at Israel and you chiefly and universally tell them like you guys are gonna have to do something that nobody else does, I think Israel just says fuck that. Like that's not realistic, right?
I get your point, but you can also agree that what they're doing right now is probably not reducing the amount of hatred against Israel.
Hatred, no, but like attacks against them, maybe. I mean,
I don't know. It's been 50 years, and October 7th was basically the worst thing that happened to them.
Yeah, October 7th was bad, but like they're fighting Palestinians that are supported only now by Iran, and that whole leadership is dead. Before, I mean, in the beginning, it was every Arab state. And then it morphed into Palestine being chiefly supported by the surrounding Arab states, by Egypt, by Syria, by Jordan. And then it changed to the Palestinians being supported by Hezbollah, the Houthis, kind of Yemen. And now it's just Hamas supported by I don't even know who the fuck is left. So like the Israeli situation has improved. October 7th was a big attack.
But terror attacks don't need fully funded military.
The Hamas one Yeah, but like I think Israel would be okay with a truck compared to like October 7th.
Okay. So you feel like if the terror attacks are not as horrible, they wouldn't overreact and they were like, okay, we let the Gazans come to work in Israel continuously.
Well, no, I think Israel has a policy of like overreacting by policy, like they
Okay.
But I'm just saying that the issue is that people always have all these criticisms for the Israeli side. But the reason why all of these criticisms tend to fall on deaf ears is because an Israeli will ask, okay, well, what do we do about all these terrorist proxies in the region? And I love and respect you, and you sound like a friendly European. But the answer you gave was fucking insane. That you just kind of have to tolerate terrorist attacks, nonstop rockets from murdering.
But when I say insane,
no other country on the planet would be expected to endure that ever.
But what happened in Ireland when they decided that there's going to be peace? Did they punish all the terrorists?
I don't know what the super resolution was to that, but I mean, that was a huge effort on the behalf of, again, America, on Clinton to negotiate. It was a really, 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 really big deal for both sides of this, no?
But were any of the terrorists punished?
I don't know if they were punished, but they finally had peace with each other, no?
Yeah, I think they pretty much even released some of the terrorists.
Yeah, but what about it? We don't have peace between Israel and Palestine right now, no?
Oh, no, I'm just saying, like the letting go argument is not something that didn't exist in the past.
No. Hold on. They didn't let it go. They reached a resolution to their issue. There was a deal. It was a Good Friday Agreement. There was a deal that was made to allow these two places to live without continually bombing each other, right?
Yeah, but people were not punished for their acts.
Yeah, but they were fighting back and forth, weren't they?
So you would say if they find some kind of peace deal, you would be fine with saying, okay, we let Hamas people live? I don't think Israel would be fine with that.
I don't care if they would be fine with that. They'd have to, and there would be way more support.
Okay.
Right? If they have a formal agreement with each other, and then there's like some sketched out agreement and territorial arrangement or whatever, yeah, Israel would have to be okay with it.
Okay. Okay. So you would be in favor, if there would be peace, that if Israel would be like punishing Hamas afterwards.
They would have an agreement, right? Yeah.
Okay.
But it seems like nobody has any kind of like scenario where that conflict is like mediated on the other side. It's only calls for...
Oh, yeah, but as in with the last discussion, I don't think that the US should be there and trying to force peace on Hamas. Like, that would be insane.
Well, I think the US kind of has to, because nobody in that region is going to do it. Like, even for Ireland, it took the United States... I think it took the U.S. involvement to finally get these sides to stop bombing each other all the fucking time.
Yeah, but Ireland is not, I would say, culturally so far away from the U.S. as, I would argue, the Arab states are.
What about the Serbians that we made stop their bad shit?
I mean, the Serbians are also not very happy now afterwards, right?
Sure, but I mean, they're not all killing each other like they were before, right?
Yeah, but it's also not the biggest piece that exists. It's also not...
It was much bigger than what was there before. I think it's a relatively peaceful... Yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with that. But I'm feeling like the region needs definitely some kind of intervention from the surrounding nations. Are like, okay, we will try, and most likely with the UN, because otherwise it will not work. That's the thing. But I also feel like Israel doesn't want the UN on their own soil. They don't want the UN there.
True, so. But I mean, that's also because the UN seems to always have like just the most unhinged positions relating to Israel. Because that same question I'm asking, what do we do about the neighboring people?
Yeah, but
there's never anything to be done about
it. But even if there is UN forces on the ground in Israel, like what would they do? Like, they're not going to kill Israelis, right? So
well, sure, but it seems like UN forces in the past, when they were UN forces in the Sinai, like Nasser just dispelled them. He said, get the fuck out. And then everybody's like, oh, well, fuck us, yeah, I guess. And they're just gone.
Why would they know UN forces on the Israeli side during that time frame?
Because Israel wasn't the one shutting down the Strait of Tehran or whatever. They weren't the one trying to shut down the waterways. Also, I don't think anybody lived in the Sinai. This was like a fucking empty, this is like a desert.
Yeah, I mean, afterwards they were trying to settle there, so they do what they do.
Sure.
I just feel like for the future.
Isn't there? People are saying. Also, are there UN forces in Lebanon as well? Because
UNIFIL.
Yeah.
UNIFIL, yeah.
So it seems like they didn't do much to keep Hezbollah.
UNIFIL is like, even there, Israel was not happy with them to be there.
Well, but
and secondly, the deal was really shitty because UNIFIL can't do anything without the Lebanese government telling them to do anything. And obviously the Lebanese government can't tell them to do anything because Hezbollah is more powerful than the Lebanese government. So it's kind of a shitty situation for UNIFIL there because they can't do anything. They just sit there and eat good food. So that's basically what they do.
All right, we're going to final words.
All right.
Thank you, Knightley.
Thanks, Knightley.
Final words. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with a lot with Destiny. I just feel like I think the more moral and ethical arguments are sometimes like brushed away because of saying, oh, Israel is probably the best country to support in the region, but I don't think that's in my opinion a good argument to make. And yeah, I just all good. Oh. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye bye.
You want more, or are you flattened enough?
Jesus. Maybe if chat
one more.
Ask chat if they want one more.
More? Because we're going to have to do more tomorrow, yeah.
Why do we have to do more tomorrow?
Oh, man. We've only gotten through three people today. There's hundreds waiting.
Three people?
Four, maybe? Yeah, that guy was in here for like 2 hours, dude.
I feel like we've gotten through like seven or eight, at least, no?
I think maybe six or seven.
good one. Putin.
Good one.
Yeah, yeah. Good one.
It wasn't that good.
Esmed. Esmed. Jesus Christ.
What the
dude.
Fuck? True. That's what, you know what? That's how I feel. True.
Big Esmed, are you?
Sorry about that.
Okay.
Can you guys hear me?
Too loud.
I think tier four, Mike.
Turn it down. Jesus. Do you guys not talk on Discord? Do you not do anything on Discord? Is this just...
No, I move my mic around. Is that better?
No, it needs to be turned down. Turn it down a little. Like 20%.
Turn it...
You're just smacking the fucking
Jesus
desk.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, all right. Is that better?
Dude.
Bro.
No? There?
Yeah, it's good. Now it's good.
Yeah. All right. I wanted to talk a little bit about Zoran Mamdani.
Are you Jewish?
I feel like you always group...
Wait, where are you? What are you? Wait. Can you not hear me? Does his headphones not work? Am I getting trolled?
Sorry.
You know what today is, right?
Okay. Where do you live it's and what is your... Where do you live and what's your ethnicity? Just so I can understand.
I'm white. I live in America.
Are you in New York?
Like, are you a New Yorker? Okay. Go. What do you got?
Wait. We're doing Israel-Palestine.
Yeah.
What's yeah, wait, why are we talking about Mamdani?
He's pretty related to Israel-Palestine. That's...
Are you going to tie it in?
How?
Yeah.
Okay, no, he's going to tie it in.
You're going to
tie
it in. Oh, talk about grocery stores. All right, so, I don't know. Zoran Mamdani, he doesn't seem to really, like, group in with, like, AOC or Bernie Sanders.
Okay, this isn't about Israel-Palestine.
He seems to be more radical. He seems to...
Yep, he's not kicking
like,
him.
I don't
Jew,
know, like,
Jew,
like,
Jew, like, Jew, like, Jew.
Okay, why is he not kicking him?
He wasn't able to say that wasn't okay.
Wait, he wasn't able to say, wait, he wasn't able to say what wasn't okay?
He wasn't able to say that, like, globalize the anti-.
He literally did. He literally disavowed this later on. He literally said that.
He didn't disavow globalize the anti-intifada, did he?
Initially, he didn't. But he did eventually. He said, yeah, that's not a good phrase. He understands where it comes from. He talked to his Eisensteins or whatever the fuck, and then they all were chill on it.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, like, there he's got go. Plenty of...
All right, you're out of here.
The reality is that I just want to... This is my honest take, really. I'm so sick of MAGA and everything else. I want Sharia law, and I want the Islamists, yes. And I'm facilitating them into this country so that they can take over. That's what I want.
I mean, hell.
Dalul.
I don't want to go. Sharia law. Fuck that.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
No.
We said yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Sorry.
Oh my fucking God.
Holy shit. Okay. Sorry. Let me start from the beginning and then we
That's
can.
A good place to start. Yeah.
Get your question in the first 30 seconds. Go.
Okay. My first question is, do you think Palestinians or like Lebanon in general, I guess you can wrap it up, deserve sovereignty?
Hold on. Are you're Lebanese? Like by birth, like in the US, or where are you from?
Yeah, no. I was born in Lebanon. I have my Lebanese passport right next to me.
Okay, and Lebanese and Palestinian people are wrapped up in the same question to
well,
you for this?
I kind of wrap them together, but okay, wait. Let me, because this was unexpected, so let me just breathe for a second.
Yeah, no problem.
Because I do want to give you like a quick argument that is actually like legitimate.
Okay.
Okay. My first like thing that I want to touch on just from besides this is that saying that Hezbollah, in my opinion, is not a proxy of Iran. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I guess it depends on how you define proxy. I mean, they get a ton of external support from them, but I mean, they also exist.
Yes, I do. But
yeah.
I would argue that, yeah, like if Iran didn't exist, that they would find funding from somewhere else.
I don't know about that, but I know that Hezbollah would definitely carry on. Before, I think it would have been from Assad, but now, I mean, but they would exist in some manner, sure, yeah.
Okay. So, okay, I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Sure.
But my initial argument is that if you believe that Palestinians deserve sovereignty, and if you believe that, like, there should be a Palestinian state in some form, like, do you disagree? Because I'm a one-stater, but I don't really care what that state is called, and I don't care what anything happens is I just want the violence to stop and people to like get together. And I don't think that that's possible without some form of UN takeover and complete demilitarization of the area to force people to actually like just get along with each other. I know it sounds like super, yeah, like kumbaya, but like in the same way that like...
Okay, how did Lebanon turn out? With the trifecta thing, religious shit, where it's like, we're going to make this work.
It's fucked. It's fucked.
So how do you think Israel would turn out if they were like, okay, we're going to do 50-50?
Yeah, but I don't think that, because this is not, like, the way that Lebanon is done is still from, like, a colonial, passed down from a French guy.
Yeah, but what you're talking about would also be, like, a colonial, you literally said the West would have to come in and demilitarize it all and set in a
state. Yes, I know, but we have different, like, okay, 100 years ago, we didn't have like an actual good, real understanding of like human rights, voting, all of those things, like democracy, all of that. But now, like if we form a state or a coalition to actually like solve for peace, like that's my like delusional like plea that is, I do believe, is possible in a world where like Israel is.
So if you like, design the one state, like how are you, who's going to be the majority?
There's no, I really think that this like obsession over majority is not something that like is even legitimate. Like I really do from like, okay, look, I have so many like actual connections to the land, like Palestinians, very moderate Palestinians that are actually like West Bank Palestinians, all of these people that just want to fucking like have freedom of movement and move on with like from this like aspect of their life. They don't care that Israel is a state, and they're okay with Israel being there because they know that they
well, sure, but like, well, just as a quick reality check, are you a younger person?
Yeah.
And are you talking about younger friends?
I'm 25. I'm 25 okay. years old.
And are your friends like generally younger friends?
They're spread out. No, because I'm talk a lot to people that live in the like still live in the West Bank. Like today, like good friends of mine that like is that live in, I live in Amsterdam right now. I'm studying here. Uh-huh. And I have like friends that have Israeli passports and stuff like that, like Palestinians that have Israeli passports and all of these things, like all of them are not delusional, like the leftists in Europe and the leftists in, or even like any pro-Palestinian that like say like, oh yeah, the Israeli state must be dissolved and all those things. I'm not like one of those people, but I do actually believe, from what I've spoken to Israelis as well, that I do believe that there is actual like standing together. I'm sure you've heard of them, all of those, like these are growing movements that if they were given international spotlight, if they were actually like put into positions of power, could actually lead to like overall peace, more peaceful outcomes. I'm not saying that the violence will stop immediately, I'm not saying all of that shit, but I'm saying that there is a path to peace and no one is actively taking it. Like
I don't think there, I think that the position you're talking about is an extreme minority position that not many people occupy, and people are going to be attacked from both sides depending on that position. So like there are a group of younger Palestinians, like especially people that either live in Israel or live in like East Jerusalem, who are just like over it and think that there should be some kind of like agreement because everybody wants to move on. But like these people tend to get hit from the right, or I should say from the more traditional, or okay, from the more older Palestinians, because they're just seen as like kind of like sellouts or whatever else. And then
because I want to hedge this, just to like, I'm providing a less extreme example from myself, like in the, not less extreme, but I'm like, I do believe that Israel has to like give major concessions if they want, if they're actually like serious on peace. Like,
sure,
I don't know if you're heard about you know about Sede Temein. You know about like,
I don't know. Wait, I don't know about what? About what?
Sede Temein, like the prison raping scandal that happened in Israel, where the CCTV cameras, like the full evidence of it was posted. And then the riots occurred to free the people that were accused of raping the Palestinians.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I haven't.
And then the Israeli Knesset had a whole on debate, public debate about whether it was morally permissible or legally permissible to rape Palestinians with sticks, and Ben-Gavir is there on videos in the middle of the Knesset saying, yes, like, why should we not rape them with sticks? Give me a good reason not to rape a Palestinian with a stick. And like, there's just, like, in my opinion, there is that equivalent of that conversation happening on the Palestinian side, but it's not equivalent when that conversation is happening on the Palestinian side among a guy, a group of couple thousand guys holding guns with AK-47s and flip-flops, while the other guys are literally having this discussion in a Knesset of, like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, in a huge ass, like, thing. I see that there is, like, some major injustice occurring, and the Israelis are the current propagators of that, in my opinion. Like, because they hold the most power in this equation. And if they hold the most power, then why don't they have the responsibility to push for peace harder than the people with no power and that are constantly, like, pushed to be more extreme? Like, I think the Israelis have reasons to be more extreme, but those reasons are not based in reality, in the sense that, like, realistically, no fighting force in the Middle East has the power to take out Israel, like, at least for the next 30 years. Like,
these are the same talking points. There's just nothing in reality that's going to work here. Like, for you to say that you don't care what the negotiated one state solution looks like, that is like paramount. It's everything. Like, who's going to be the owner of that state? Will it be the Jewish people, or will it be Arabs?
No, but why do you think, like, who owns the U.S.?
Americans. What do you mean?
Yeah. And so why can't, like, Israel Palestinians control the U.S.? Like, why can't it?
Because they don't view themselves that way. Like, what do you mean?
But they can if the UN actually made, like, a specific, like, because look,
what if, okay, the UN came in and said, here's the rule, one state and no hating each other, no more being
mean. Imagine this hypothetical with me, and I'll shut the fuck up after this. Okay, imagine 1 year from now or 2 years from now, there is a large form of, like, the Hague or something like this, some tribunal that happens in the aftermath of all this. And there are all these people that have been propagating violence that actually get held to some form of accountability. I'm not saying that they actually get put in prison, but maybe they just get kicked out of power and barred from being able to hold power in any way. And you actually have a Israeli-Palestinian coalition designed to create, like, once. Is that, like, am I really, like, stretching reality there? Or do you think that, like, yeah.
Yes, I think you're really stretching reality. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You would have to get the world to agree on this, because this would be like a UN or fucking UN Security Council.
Yeah, and I think that there is, like, a chance where you have, like, China, Russia, and, like, America, like, at least not vetoing, like, any decision about this. If there is, like, if Netanyahu and all of the Hamas people and all of the people that are, like, propagating war in Israel and Palestine and Lebanon and like all get put into some, like, tribunal, and this way of life that has existed in the last 100 years can actually, like, cease, and people can just look at each other without, like, constant bombings, then I feel like there is a path to peace. Like, the racism in America, like, ended after, like, there was real kind of desegregation between blacks and whites, and that's kind of, like, I'm not saying that America is, like, this perfect non-racist place, but, like, this ended.
We have different, but it's a different, but it's a different, it's a totally different.
I know it's, yeah.
Well, first of all, hold on. But when you say you're Lebanese, okay, how were you one or two when you moved to Europe?
I was born in Lebanon, bro.
Yeah, but how old were you when you went to your international schools and completely and totally left the region? That you're giving me this, like, this is, like, the most European Western take ever, that, like, all these people can just live together if the UN comes in and says, guys, no more bullying each other, like, you guys are all going to love each other, and the difference between Arabs and Israel and Jews are just like the difference between black people and white people in the United States. Like,
I'm saying that the only reason that the
wait, when did you leave Lebanon?
I left Lebanon in 2006, so I was 6 years old, but I have been to Lebanon like 3-4 months of the year each year most times, and I'm not like some, like,
there's no way, I just don't understand how the people of, like, the, I'm, listen, I agree with everything you're saying. If we could make Arabs and Jews get along, then the whole everything would be solved here, right? There'd be literally no problem. But you're, like, talking about, like, solving thing, like,
I don't think, like, bro, pre-Israel, yes, there was, like, Arab and Jewish, like, problems, but there was no fucking Holocaust that happened in the Middle East for Jews. Like, there was no, like, this insane tension that occurred before Israel was formed as a country.
Because they were a massively, like, subjugated people that were a massive minority, kept in super minority people that were treated as, like, basically other citizens. Like,
My great, you won't believe me when I say this, because this sounds retarded as fuck, and maybe this is why I'm so, like, optimistic as a person, is because my great grandma like my great grandma is a Polish Jew that escaped from Poland to Syria and married a fully Syrian Muslim man who was my great grandpa all through my mom's side. Like, you won't, like, this is actual truth. Like, I am 1/8 Polish because of that.
Okay.
And like, she lived in Syria as a Jew and married a Muslim dude, and like, nothing happened. Like, they faced no discrimination in Syria for doing this. Like, he still was not disowned by his family.
Well, it sounds like the guy had she married a Jewish, or she married a Muslim man. I guess she probably religiously converted, right?
Mm-mm.
No,
she didn't.
She celebrated Shabbat and all the Jewish religion and all that everything.
I don't know how religious. Muslim. Honestly, I don't know how. I honestly don't know how religious she was, but she did not convert to a Muslim. I know that for sure.
Did she wear the fucking hair piece?
No hijab.
No
hijab. No, because bro, like, hijab is like, in at least from my, like, I'm not gonna tell you that there's many Lebanese people, many Arab people that force hijabs on people.
100%. Okay, listen. I can't speak to your grandma. That's fine, but like.
Yeah, like, okay, I get what you're saying.
I would agree. If you could just make Arabs and Jews love each other and not have to hate each other, then, I mean, like, yeah.
We'll just take LSD and...
sure, you fucking based. Yeah, you should do that. Poison the water, LSD the fuck out of the whole country, the region, and make everybody fucking chill. But there's, like, so many external forces that are encouraging the fighting between both sides.
Let me bring it back to a more realistic. Let me just say something more realistic. Like, on a scale of 1 to 10, with you 10 being the most likely and 1 being the least likely... What do you think the percentage chances that, like, of Israel is gonna be, like, judged for committing a genocide in Gaza? Because I do believe that there is enough evidence to say that it is a genocide, but if you don't think so, I would like to hear why.
I don't know if I think there's a genocide, but I mean, like, based on, like, recent things, like, over the past year, things that have happened, and then statements by the leadership, it's probably a lot more likely. Regardless of whether it was one or wasn't one, my guess right now is that it's more than likely not that the ICJ is going to say that there was. I'm totally vibing that out.
Yeah, so it's like 50-50, you would say?
Sure, I guess. Yeah, is my vibe. Okay. On.
And then one thing I want to mention about the strikes in Lebanon, just for, like, the thing, the last 10...
Final wrap-up.
Yeah, okay. The last 10 strikes, the 100 strikes in 10 minutes, like, that really... that was, like, some... like off-the-cuff shit that Israel hadn't done that type of shit in a really long time to Lebanon, where, like, I do agree that in the south they've been giving sometimes the Gaza treatment of just, like, annihilating places and forcing people out. But in Lebanon, like, they are usually in Beirut, at least, because they know that the Lebanese population is, like, quite, you know, like, you know, not so opposed, and there's, like, quite people that are, like, you know, like, apolitical and all that thing, like, that they don't really want to strike these, like, heavy civilian centers because they don't want to push the entirety of the Lebanese population against them, because right now it's, like, not the entire Lebanese population against them. But, like, this is a big change to how they used to do before, because these areas that were struck, like, I'm telling you, like, there's a sweet shop next to my grandma's place that was hit, like, and she lives, like, 300 meters away from that place, and they leveled the entire building, like, and there was, like, no, like, Hezbollah command center, from my understanding of, like, being in that place multiple times a year as far as, like, just 8 months ago. And then I wanted to say, actually, it's blanked from my mind, so, yeah. Thank you for listening to me. I do appreciate it. Yeah. And yeah.
Thanks a lot, buddy.
Hope you have a nice day.
Yeah, be careful, buddy.
I don't know how to decide what to do about Israel-Palestine, Stephen.
You don't have a solution?
No, I don't.
Not even a small one.
I think they should probably just learn to fucking deal with each other and realize
they should be friends.
True, actually. True, actually, though.
Literally the same God.
True. Well,
yeah, I think it is. Careful. In these religions.
Careful about that one.
My solution would be get rid of settlers in the West Bank.
They don't care about that. That's just...
make them move.
Jesus.
Sure, but they don't care about that.
Who's that?
That's just the non-Jews. That's just
I think the Jews shouldn't be there.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter. I mean, they should. Okay. You're right.
Brave.
There we go. We agree.
Brave.
Yeah, but it won't solve anything.
Brave. Brave takedown. Any more brave takes?
It's a true take, unless you disagree. Say you disagree, if you do.
I just said it was brave.
I know. I'm saying if you disagree, you say so.
I didn't say I disagreed.
All right. I agree.
Okay.
Fuck you. Go. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
Wait, where are you going?
Seriously.
Why?
Yeah, seriously.
I want to eat. I haven't eaten. I've been here.
You don't have to leave Discord to go eat.
Yeah, I can. I do. Watch.
Ah, misspoke.
What a pussy.
Seriously, I hate him.
That's sad.
What he's become. An eater.
Yeah.
He just goes to eat food. It's crit.
Was I wrong?
About what?
My convo with you about how everyone's just kind of trying to tone police you?
Well, it's not really, though. They want my position to be different is what's happening.
Yeah, it's also, too, I think the Reddit... Well, I don't know if all of those people are from the subreddit, but I feel like the Reddit is a lot left from your position.
On some issues, yes, yeah. But it's like... Is it like I complain about this forever and it's just I feel like it's never going to change and I don't give a fuck, whatever. But like, there's just no center left pillar on the internet anywhere. Like, I'm like, no, that's not true. I'm sorry. I think, well, no, because even like, I feel like probably Mockler and Brian Taylor Cohen all probably, I don't know where they sit on like Israel. My guess is they're probably a lot more conciliatory towards that pro-Pali side too. So there's just not very strong like neo-lib or center left places. So it's very easy to kind of like give way to the further left feeling on all of it just because there's so much pressure moving in that direction. But
yeah, we're culturally weak.
Yeah. So we need to fight back.